It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up reaction to Game 2 of the National League Division Series again, between the Braves and the Brewers. I am Caleb Johnson and with my co-host Joe Patrick. Joe, how are you feeling after finally the Braves get a win and get to go back home with this thing split as we knew was possible as it heads back to Atlanta?
Feeling great. This is easy. No problem at all, right? Braves just took home field advantage. You know, everything's going our way. We got Ian Anderson pitching tomorrow, probably in a beneficial pitching matchup for the Braves. No, I mean, it was a much more pleasing game to watch. I think we were just discussing this before we came on. Just on the eye, it felt like the Braves had more opportunities to create offense inning by inning, as opposed to yesterday where it was kind of like a slow dirge throughout the game in that crazy pitcher's duel. So I'm feeling good. You know, I really do feel like the Braves are, you know, kind of back in control of the series. And it feels like they have some mojo now going for them, where, you know, after the game that they had yesterday, it was just kind of, you know, you didn't know. It felt kind of, I don't know, it just felt like bad times. So feeling better now. How about you?
I am not willing to say that the Braves are back in charge of this series.
Like playing your role. This is the good cop, bad cop that we have going on the podcast here.
But it's true, because, you know, it's one of those, saw some really good things tonight. Saw some smart, really smart base running by Freddie Freeman tonight, whereas a night ago didn't see necessarily what I would consider the best base running. And just overall, like, just the fact guys are getting hits. I mean, just strictly from a one night to the next, last night we had what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. If you throw Charlie in there too, 7 guys who went up to the plate last night and left without a hit. Mm-hmm. That was not the case tonight. Now, so far in the series, you've just got Adam Duvall and Travis d'Arnaud as the only Braves hitters who don't have at least a hit, which makes a difference. Go ahead.
I think that's what you're pointing to is exactly one of the reasons I feel like a lot better, is because it feels like, you know, Freddie Freeman got a big RBI hit that he needed. You know, Austin Riley, it doesn't feel like he's tensed up anymore. Or I don't feel that way about him, because he hit that homer. It feels like kind of the weight is off his back. I felt like the players that needed to come up big in this game, Ozzie Albies, another one, had that double that was right off the top of the wall. I felt like it was important. It was important for me to see that from those guys.
Well, and fair enough. I will say this. I had some real concern as to whether or not what happened last night was just going to be what the Braves were going to look like, which is you weren't going to get much offensively outside a hit, you know, a mm-hmm. home run or something of the sort. And I think last night there were, 9 total hits in the game. And then the Braves tonight just themselves alone had 7. So you see those improvements. The reason why I'm not willing to go and be like, you know, whoo, all right, we can, you know, we can calm down now and we can kind of see this Braves team take over the series, is because give me another game of this. Give me one more of this, especially when you're not going to have a sure thing on the mound. You know, I get Ian Anderson, especially last postseason, was a godsend for this team. What was, you know, just so incredibly composed, hasn't necessarily been that this season. But to get what you got out of Max Fried tonight, just incredible once again. I wondered how you felt, Joe, about We got polar opposites from last night to tonight. We got Charlie Morton, who people felt like was left in too long.
Mm-hmm.
And then did Snit learn from that or just feel a little differently tonight? And so Max Fried gets pulled after 81 pitches, maybe somewhat a little early, but also had those signs of getting rattled in the sixth inning. Did you like that move for him to get pulled there?
We were texting about this. It was almost the same exact scenario, other than if Max had gone out for the seventh and like walked a guy or gave up a hit. I can't remember what Charlie Morton did with that first batter that he put on before the homer yesterday. But I don't know. I don't know if it was Snit kind of, you know, learning a lesson or, you know, just deciding to go with a different route. I do think that the fact that Max Fried would be your game five starter in this series does play into the fact that he would want to get him out of there, not like tax him too hard in this game, especially when you kind of have the comfortable, you know, comfortable-ish lead that the team had. You felt like that they had enough in the bullpen to get that through that pretty cleanly. The game did kind of bog down in that seventh, eighth, ninth inning. It was not nearly as smooth as it was while Max Fried was out there, but I just wanted to give a shout out to Fried in particular, because I was talking to Thomas Mott, our colleague at 92.9 this morning on his morning show. And, you know, I was thinking about Max Fried and last year in 2020, when this starting rotation was really totally out of sorts. And it seemed like Max Fried was the only kind of regular starter that you could rely on to give you a good outing. I think they went through like 18 starters that year in 60 games, like something crazy like that. Yoli Chacin started the game. They were trading for guys and starting him like on the day that they traded for him. Like, it was so bad. And so what that did was it made Max Fried they put so much pressure on him to go out there and basically give them not just like a decent start, like a good like six innings. He was having to go out there and really give the bullpen a night off, essentially, and having to pitch like most of those games and lock teams out. And he did that. And there was just so much pressure on him every single game, it seemed like, he went out there. And that's why I just really feel so confident in him in a situation like this, when there is a lot of pressure. And I wouldn't have nearly the amount of confidence in this type of game with other pitchers as I do with Max Fried. So it was great to see him go out there and just completely shut down the Brewers. And we know that they already struggle more against left-handed pitchers than they do against righties. So it played into his favor as well, just matchup wise. And he went out there and did his job completely and really set up the team to be in a really good position. So hats off to him for that.
And it also matters when you're getting run support. I think that, you know, can't be understated enough. Is you talk about those decisions being made of, you know, ooh, I need to get one more inning out of my starter, or nope, you know what, we can turn to the bullpen, because then tonight you got exactly what we spoke of last night was a potential scenario that could have happened if Charlie Morton had been pulled before the seventh inning, mm-hmm. and you get Luke Jackson in there. Luke Jackson comes in tonight, and I won't say, like, its stuff wasn't terrible.
It was okay.
It just wasn't necessarily there.
Yeah.
And so you get that scenario where, all right, you got to pull Luke, or you don't have to, but the numbers would tell you, and the scenario felt that you, all right, Luke Jackson got through two. Let's, you know, Matzik needs to come in and it creates that awkward scenario that, you know, leads to guys on base in an uncomfortable close game.
Yeah, and Craig Counsell brought in Vogelbach to pinch hit in that scenario, and that's when they decided to make the move. And it was the right move to make, because he has crazy splits. I saw Brad Rowland pointed out that he has a 117 WRC plus against righties versus 46 against lefties. So I think it made a lot of sense to bring in Matzik in that spot. And then of course they pinch hit it. They subbed him out again, but it made better sense than to have Luke Jackson just stay in the game against the hitter of that caliber with that kind of matchup. So I think that it was the right call. I thought it was a well-managed game by Brian Snicker.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that he made the right moves when he needed to.
Well, and didn't make moves when mm-hmm. he could have there in the eighth inning.
Yep.
That was one that look, there's a buddy of mine that me and him have gone back and forth a long time over Tyler Matzik. And, you know, he's been a strong believer in Tyler Matzik needing to be the closer here in Atlanta. And my one position against not having Matzik in that position is the fact of, I feel like Snit likes to put him in somewhat low pressure situations. You know, he shows he's a really solid pitcher. That's great. But he also doesn't necessarily end up in some of the most stressful innings. He did last year in the postseason, and tonight was as about as stressful as, you know, as you can get outside of it.
Given his role, yeah.
Yeah, well, and the fact that I guess it was a three-run game instead of a one-run game. And so any damage that he could have done when, you know, he had two on would have just tied the game instead of giving up the lead. But still, super high-pressure situation. And you saw, you know, an Enoa there available if Snit wanted to turn to him, and trusting in his guy worked out. So, you know, you talk about hats off to Max Fried, hats off to Tyler Matzek to get put in an awkward position where you've got to come in and get the final out of an inning, go back out. And I guess kind of, you know, like Tyler Matzek is truly rewriting his career just in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it is completely wild. Like, you know, I think sometimes
people left baseball completely.
Yeah. You know? Well, that was, it got brought up last night. The fact that he was, you know, pitching in an independent league in 2019, and just the complete turnaround that he's had and how consistent, and dependable he's been. It was shown again tonight that, I mean, all of these relievers, it was kind of like bend, but don't break. Like the lame trope that we love throwing out was actually true.
And that brings us to Phyllis in the comments, who said, Will Smith, woo, yeah. Because that was,
hey.
I texted Caleb Dora. I was like, not like this.
I know.
Don't let it happen like this.
Well, and it felt like it. It felt like it with Matzek in the eighth, where it was like, oh, all right, is this lead going to get blown right here with one swing? Then you get it right there in the ninth inning. I have this weird thing with Will Smith that the numbers, like the history over this season has shown that he might mess up, but so many more times than not, he's going to come through, even if it's just allowing like a run. I was fully anticipating him to allow a run and it to be 3-1 and everybody's like, oh no, but he's been that way all year,
yeah,
of where you have to really sweat it out, but it's almost in a very weird way like he thrives on having a runner on base. It's almost like
he feels the anger of Braves fans. And he's like, it powers him. It gives him more movement on his slider and stuff. I don't know what it is exactly.
Well, and because you see it when he gets that final out, every time he's been in one of these high pressure situations and he gets that final out, like you can see this rage, you know, kind of come out of him. That it's almost like it drives him, and he needs a little controversy to get through the inning, which obviously is very stressful, but it's great for TV. It was great TV.
I love also, you know, Dave O'Brien from The Athletic asked Brian Snicker post game sometime last week in the final week of the season about Will Smith. And just, you know, it was one of those games where he had made the save, but he gave up a few barrels. You know, he put runners on. He may have given up some runs. I can't even recall exactly. But he asked Snicker about, you know, is that a concern or whatever? And Snit, you know, really defended Will strongly and, you know, didn't quite have a what I would call like a blow up. Snit really doesn't do that, but it was as close as you'll see to Snit kind of doing that. I would say it was like right on the edge of him just kind of like wanting to like rant and scream and stuff like that. But I thought it was kind of funny after the when he gave up the walk and they had the camera on Snit in the dugout where you could clearly see he's like pissed off.
Yeah.
He just walked him. But I'm sure he would defend him again tonight in the press conference. But, you know, I mean, he did get the job done. So you got to give him credit for that.
Well, so here's a decision that I want to talk to you about because it's something that we were texting during the game. I was very surprised when Fried was taken out of the game, when we saw Jock Peterson, because you and I were going, well, do you send him out for another? And I was kind of on the, I want to pull him, but I understand if Snit doesn't. Then I saw Jock Peterson. And I was like, okay, decision has been made. Then I was telling you, maybe this is a time you expect a Jacob Webb or someone of that caliber because you've got a couple of runs on a lead. And instead, Snit goes with the decision of we have to win this game.
Gotta lock it down.
So he sent out his best three guys. How do you think that's going to affect things now that those guys are, I mean, pretty much, at least I would think, out of the picture to pitch on Monday?
Well, I think that they will be able to pitch. They'll technically be available. I don't know if they will be kind of the first names you would go to in the same exact situation like they did tonight. Yeah. Because they will have the day off on Sunday. And also they had a long rest or just kind of a period to be able to kind of recover and do whatever they need to do in that five games time period before game one yesterday. I'm not a reliever, so I don't know how those guys feel, necessarily like whether they would be available or not, but I think that they will be available. But to your point, I don't think that he would necessarily go to them in the exact same way he did tonight. If the same scenario were to arise in game three, I think that, honestly, it was very interesting to see Noah get up in the bullpen because he's a guy who obviously a lot of us have been kind of thinking might be or would be the game four starter.
Yeah,
still could be. It's not like getting up is it necessarily kind of throws that out the window, but it does certainly seem to say that, that Brian Snitker is going to use him in like tight situations at the end of games. And I think that's the right call to make too. I mean, I would rather go to him if you feel like he's the one who can get you out of trouble than trying to like save him for a specific point. It'll be interesting to see if they end up going to him in game three, because obviously if he pitches in game three, that would rule him out of starting that game, unless they only plan for him to do like a kind of like an opener situation and do like a full bullpen game in game four. But I thought that was honestly one of the more interesting parts of the bullpen management, despite the fact that he didn't even get in the game.
Well, yeah, it seems like it's one of those, like, is that tipping your cap to Drew Smyly starting game four, or is that tipping your cap to we pulled Charlie with 84 pitches and we think he can go out there on short rest? Like, it's one of those. Either way, it seemed to me that if you're making those kinds of decisions in game two, then you're not necessarily expecting him for game four. But like you said, I mean, he didn't use him. He didn't pull the pin out on him just yet. And so, it is available. Showing some of his future decisions there.
Yeah. So we talked about this also when the roster came out, and maybe even before the roster came out, when we were kind of doing predictions about what we thought would happen. And I thought that especially after the roster came out and Smyly was on it, I thought that really leaned toward him starting game four. And I think that, if you look at Drew Smyly this year, he has been pretty damn good his first and second time through the orders. It's just that third time through the order, things really have fallen apart for him. And when you look at the splits, the Brewers this season have only OPS 648 against left-handed starters in games when left-handers start. Again, Smiley's got those good splits for early in the game. So I think you are looking at Drew Smyly as a game four starter, not a starter you expect to go six or seven innings or something like that. I think he'll probably only go 3, 4, maybe 5 if he's really, really good and he hasn't gotten to the top of the order for the third time yet. But I would certainly expect that at this point, given the way that we saw Brian Snitker preparing to use Waskar Yanoa tonight if he needed. And he said all along that Yanoa would be available out of the bullpen in these games, in games one and two, if they felt like they needed him. Of course, that was on the cards tonight, but they didn't end up using him. So he would still be available. I wouldn't mind seeing some sort of a Smyly Yanoa kind of combo start for that game four. I think there are worse ways you could go about it, but I do think it leaves a lot of options still on the table. But I agree that I think we may have learned a little bit something about what he'll do in game four based on what we saw tonight.
I still am of the opinion that I don't want Drew Smyly making an appearance in this postseason.
Doesn't feel great,
but at the same time, if it's one of those, if that's what it comes to, at least I'm not the one making the decisions.
And I'll be interested. I'll be interested to see if the Brewers run Corbin Burns back for game four on short rest. I mean, because I don't know. I could probably look it up right now about what his splits are like when he's on short rest. But, you know, just given the way he pitched in game one, I don't want to see him again.
But I have to imagine he's not had that much experience at pitching on short rest just from the fact of what it was last year that he was a bullpen guy.
Yeah.
And so
he and Woodruff both last time they were in the playoffs in 2018 with the Brewers, but they were essentially bullpen arms. I think they may, one of them got a start where they did a piggyback situation, but you're right. They haven't really been in these situations.
Here's another one. This is a stat that was said on the TV broadcast because there was a weird move made tonight that ended up being completely insignificant. But Jock Peterson comes to the plate, gets a base hit, and then we get Terrence Gore, mm-hmm. who comes in, who was a complete shock to make this roster. The man has two World Series rings. That's just wild to me because of the teams that he's been on and literally just been on those teams to be a base runner in the postseason, which is exactly why he was brought onto this roster, was to be a base runner to get steals. So I don't know if you caught this, Joe, but Terrence Gore in postseason history has 5 steals in his postseason career. Do you know how many at-bats Terrence Gore has in his postseason career?
I'm going to say it's less than 5.
It's 2.
Two at-bats.
The man has 5
Talk
steals and 2 at-bats. Yeah, so just a weird scenario. I was really scratching my head because I was texting you that I was confused why. I mean, sure, Jock Peterson, not the best base runner, but also there was like 2 outs in the 7th. And I was like, what's the decision making here? I don't get why 2 bench players are being burned up back to back in that scenario. But then it also it led to a really odd scenario where that stat came up and I was like, you want to talk about, you don't often think about specialists anymore in Major League Baseball, especially as relief pitchers have kind of been, the rules have changed. So there can't be too many specialists anymore, but you don't think about offensive specialists like that. And Terrence Gore definitely fits that category.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I've been looking up Corbin Burns's career splits, and for the 3 days rest that he would be on if he does start game four, he's never started on that rest. So
okay.
I don't think it's totally out of the cards that they would do it, just like the plan for him going 3 or 4 innings or something like that. But there you go.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing at Luke Jackson sent out a tweet just a few minutes ago,
mm-hmm.
and says, Tyler Nutzak. That's it. That's the tweet.
He's got good Twitter game. Luke Jackson does for sure.
Yeah. So Luke's supporting his teammate there who, like we said, Matzik had a very stressful 8th inning and really came through. So here's where we are. The fact is, Braves are tied up in the series. The series is coming home to Atlanta, where Ian Anderson is going to pitch game 3. How are you taking this all in, Joe? I know you said at the beginning of this, very optimistic now.
Yeah, that may have been just my optimism talking there about the matchup that the Braves will have tomorrow in terms of him being the better of the two starters against Peralta. But I don't know. I mean, I generally have confidence that Ian Anderson's going to go out there and give you a good start. Remember, he was the guy who was on the mound when the Braves clinched the series against Philadelphia last week, which definitely felt like a playoff game. Of course, there wasn't probably the stress that on that game, considering uh-huh. they pretty much had it in hand at that point. They were going to win the division pretty much regardless. But, I just have confidence in Ian. I think that he's a pitcher. You know, when you talk to him or you hear him speak in press conferences, he's clearly like a very mature guy and almost, you know, he's been in and around baseball's entire life. His dad is a coach. And I just have a lot of confidence that he's going to be able to go in there and give the Braves a good start. I will say that, you know, the series does get really interesting from here, these next couple games at Truist Park, just in terms of a lot of the stuff we've been talking about on this show so far, which is like all the game theory that's going to be played between the managers, you know, the decisions, the pitching decisions are going to start getting really interesting because both teams have these kind of top two quality starters that are way above and beyond kind of the rest of the rotation. And so now you're going to start to see probably both teams have a little bit more spurts of offense where they're able to put runs across the board. It's going to, our emotions are going to get high. At least I know mine will be. And yeah, it'll just, that always makes the game more exciting, right? When there's more decisions that can possibly be made. And there's kind of just kind of a wild card to borrow a phrase to that you can throw in.
Here's another little thing. With Peralta pitching on Monday, obviously that's another righty that the Braves are going to be facing. So as Snit has kind of shown all season, doesn't like throwing Jock Peterson in those situations. However, Jock Peterson has been pretty successful offensively in his two pinch hit appearances. Yeah. Is it, are you still sticking with Rosario out in left for game three, or are you cool if or would you be up for a move with Jock Peterson coming in?
I would be up for a move. Okay. I thought I would have been up for a move tonight. That's to be perfectly honest.
All right. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy.
I like Jock Peterson. Just I was talking to Thomas about this again this morning, but I like his playoff experience, or maybe we talked about it yesterday. I was talking about the swagger of Jock Peterson and just like the pearls, way he's able to kind of loosen you up. And especially I feel like at home, that kind of attitude plays really well. So, I like him. It does seem like Snit is tending toward Rosario for the defense, for that extra bit of athleticism that he brings. And I thought he laid down a nice bunt. Was it the first inning or the second inning, I think, that he did that?
Yeah.
When they had shifted over. Nice little bit of play from Rosario there. Not necessarily the way that I think the analytics community would have opted for, but if you can do that, then it works. So,
well, yeah, but here's the thing. You talk about Rosario, laying down a nice bunt.
Yeah.
You know, Peterson's kind of been doing other things, you know, hitting it over the fence. Mm-hmm. I think would be more beneficial. Even though I think Snit said before this game today that like he's planning on sticking with his same lineup. Like you saw the Brewers really switched things up, especially in the infield tonight. And I wonder if that's where the traditionalist of Brian Snicker holds out, that he's like, nope, I like something, I'm going to keep it going.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I should not get my hopes up that Jock Peterson would crack that lineup. But I also think the other thing with Peterson, when you talk about this series coming back to Atlanta, is I think Peterson profiles really well in the home ballpark as a lefty. You know, obviously Rosario is a lefty too, but Peterson has a lot more power and he can kind of utilize that short porch a little bit more than Rosario would be able to, or just kind of would approach it. So I like that kind of going in Peterson's favor as well. But, you know, again, it sounds like it's probably unlikely that we see that.
Yeah.
But at least he's shown that he can come into those kind of clutch situations as a pinch hitter and perform.
And so speaking of that, that does also make me think it's very interesting when Orlando Arcia is coming in the game and not facing the best closer in baseball, looked a little different. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty interesting. Instead of the deer in headlights that we saw last night. And so I don't know. I guess on that point, it's kind of one of those, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of deal. It did work out in game one because he did get Peterson did hit a home run. Like it worked out. Game two obviously looked good tonight as well. I just would like to see that more consistently in the lineup, and I think it would benefit the Braves if he was in there the entire game. Anything else? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just to add, just before we get out of here, I did just want to say I think that with the pitching, the starting pitching kind of dropping for both teams in terms of the quality that we're going to see over these next couple of games, I do think that plays into the Braves' advantage as the better offensive team. And so I think that things are setting up relatively well for them. Wouldn't be surprised to see this series go five games. It was always going to be a series between two teams that are both very good, relatively evenly competitively balanced. But I think that you got to like where you are now if you're the Braves, especially after the way they started the series.
Yeah, don't say five games. I don't want this one. Well, it's just one of those I would prefer, obviously, but I just finish this thing at home. Like, don't have to go back to Milwaukee, because I think especially look, I don't know that it'll stay like this, but the way the Giants are looking, yeah, that's a team that you should probably want to get as much rest as possible before definitely. You have to face.
That was impressive what they did to the Dodgers in game one there. It's almost, well, not a shame, but it's kind of like, it's weird to me that one of those teams is going to be knocked out after that, because they're both really good.
Yeah. Anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, nothing else. We'll be back after game three on, will that be Monday? We'll be back again post game. That game is supposed to start at 1 p.m. as of now, unless the Astros end up sweeping the White Sox. So I guess root for the sweep. Is that what we're rooting for? Do we want the 1 p.m. start?
1 p.m. on a Monday?
Yeah. If not, it will be either 1 p.m. or 4:30 if the Astros and White Sox sweep.
Man, that's really like,
I know
that really
weird.
Messes
really
with
weird.
Your day. It's one of those like,
right, you know, I know, like, I had to cancel things.
And yeah, so I know obviously like people watching this, plenty of them have regular day jobs, right. that would be very difficult to see. But as someone who doesn't have a typical day job, and you kind of plan things to get errands done during the day, it's really hard to, I'm thinking just now, like having to sit down, watch a game, obviously come on and react to it post game, and then go do some errands or something like that.
Right.
That
doesn't, then you that have things to do afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't sound very likely. So I like I'm weird in that I like these 4:30, 5:30 starts.
I do too.
Today was very difficult because obviously a lot of college football going on. If you were like me trying to watch the Georgia game as well as watching the Braves game, it was like, come on, really? We got to do this, but it's fine.
I had like three screens going.
Yeah. So I guess on a Monday, at least there's nothing conflicting. I'd much rather the 4:30 start than the 1 o'clock start. I don't know.
Well, regardless of what it is, just keep tabs. We'll be here for you after the game on Facebook Live. So you got that to look forward to.
Yeah, we'll find a way to complain either way. It's fine. but thanks everybody for watching. We are going to post these wherever you listen to podcast if you did miss out on it. But for my co-host Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Thanks for watching Batter Up.